Let's open a hearing on 2226A, and Judith will give us some background.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House Bill 2226A comes to us unanimously from the House floor. The measure eliminates the exemption for water utilities serving 300 or less customers. It subjects a water utility serving 500 or less customers and charges a monthly average residential rate of $18 or more to regulation, except financial regulation, by the Public Utility Commission. It requires that an association that is not a public utility be considered for regulation as a public utility if 20% of the members request it through a petition. It exempts cooperatives and public bodies from the measure. We have a no fiscal and no revenue impact statement on the measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We've got Rebecca Hawthorne and Lee Meyer signed up to testify. Mike, you just ask me to come up and explain things to us and tell us what we're up to.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, I'm Lee Beyer, commissioner with the Oregon Public Utility Commission. I have with me Rebecca Hawthorne, who's the manager of the PUC's water program. And to start off, Mr. Chair, I couldn't tell you what you're up to, but we'll try to address the bill. It's nice to be with you this morning. This bill is one of two that I think you'll see this session. We've worked them through the House so far. They virtually have had no opposition and shouldn't have any opposition. The bills are outgrowth of the last legislative session, a request by this body that we take a look at the water regulation programs that the PUC run. We've done that. We impaneled a work group of users, both customers as well as utility owners and other interested parties like the health division or health department's water sanitation folks, to take a look at the regulations and suggest some changes to that. This particular bill addresses two points. It addresses the definition and clarifies the definition of what a water utility is, and it talks about specifically clarifies the PUC's authority with regards to associations. I should start off by saying that there are over 2,000 water utilities in Oregon. Most of those are not regulated by the PUC. Those include municipal water systems, public water districts, and cooperatives. And essentially, the theory is that if it's a public body that has its own elected board of directors, there's no need to have another organization representing those customers. The ones that PUC regulation covers are those principally small water companies that are monopolies, and the PUC takes the position of being their advocate and reviews the service quality levels as well as the regulation on rates for some of them. So this is nothing new. What it does, as I say, is it clarifies which companies are covered, and probably the biggest change is the issue of associations. Over the years, we've determined that associations are not clearly identified in law. Unlike a cooperative, which is, I guess, the closest thing to an association, cooperatives are clearly defined in how they are established in Oregon law. Associations, and I would suggest you think about those like the Homeowners Association, their organizational structure and their membership and the right to participate as a member in governance is not set out in law, and it varies from association to association. What this does is it simply says that if you live in an associate, or if you live in a service territory, water service territory that's governed by an association, if 20% of the members request that the PUC come in and take a look and see if there needs to be regulatory oversight, that we would have the authority to do that. And it actually settles a problem. We had one in Central Oregon the last year where a few of the members were upset with the management and asked us to come in. We went and took a look, and it wasn't very clear, and we decided that we did not have jurisdiction. Now, I'll tell you, that didn't leave some people very happy, but there wasn't a clear basis in law for us to do this. This solves that problem. So it's basically a cleanup bill, and as I say, it's one of a couple. The other one should be coming your way, and actually I think it's on the House floor this morning. So, Mr. Chair, that's a quick overview, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Fisher.
You talk about a swinging door regulation. How many swinging doors have you faced?
Chairman Shields and Senator Fisher, I couldn't give you an exact number.
Yes, could you give us your name for the record?
Sure, Rebecca Hathorn with the PUC. I couldn't give you a definitive number, but we do face on a yearly basis, I would say probably less than a dozen, where we're having to deal with the utilities for a short period of time while they're fixing problems and getting service up to par because they have provided inadequate service, and then basically they fall out of our regulation after the problem is fixed.
And you don't have any problem with those that you already regulate having problems from time to time?
Problems from time to time. Most of the bigger issues that we deal with are trying to these investigations where we're trying to determine jurisdiction. Those take a lot of time for us to go through. But the ones that we do regulate, we don't have much problem with at all.
Other questions?
Yeah.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The regulations that are subject to these small water districts or whatever you call them, are they only your regulations or is it all regulations?
Chairman Shields, Senator Beyer. In our rules, we do state that the water utilities need to follow the Health Division rules. And so in our rules, we sort of encompass the Health Division rules as well. And so we do require them to be up to par with the Health Division as well as our rules.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I don't think my question was answered. Are these small utilities, less than 300 customers now, are they subject currently to Health Division rules? They're not subject to your rules. So are they subject to Health Division rules? And if so, or if not, will this bill make them?
Shield, Senator Beyer, they are subject currently to Health Division rules. The Health Division rules cover a lot more water companies. They cover 15 connections or more. And so all water companies need to report their water quality to the Health Division currently.
Mr. Chair, if I might, Senator Beyer, I think you're trying to draw a distinction. And I think the distinction is that the health rules primarily address purely the safety of the water. Our rules primarily they include those by reference, but they go beyond that and talk about the quality of the service. You know, is there enough pressure there to get the water to the house and allow two neighbors to use water at the same time, break in service, you know, fixing of the repairs, quality of the lines. It's the quality of the service more than just the safety of the water, which is the Health Division's primary concern, although we are predominantly the enforcement arm for the Health Division if they're having problems for those that we regulate.
Okay. Mr. Chair, this issue is brought forward by there's a small water district. I guess it's a water district or something. I'm not sure how it's governed. That's why I was curious to know about this in my district who, I assume many small water districts, they can't afford the full-time staff with all the requirements of the Health Division. And they are struggling right now because they're trying to figure out how they can, you know, do that, still provide quality water and at a price that their citizens can afford. And I want to know if this regulation or this change is going to affect them.
Mr. Chair, this would not affect them in that way. I think what you're talking about are the standards of the Clean Water Act that are coming. You know, they're stepping up. Those are federal standards, and those apply equally to all 2,000 water companies. I believe that's accurate. And it's the safety of the water issue. And frankly, a lot of companies are having those problems. We hear it a lot from the smaller companies. In fact, the other bill that will be coming through changes a bit of our policy to allow companies to, in essence, have a infrastructure charge up front so they have the money to make some of those improvements and can factor them into rates. Very difficult for small companies who are sort of mom-and-pop operations and are... They haven't a long history in the design of water rates. It's usually, you know, so much a month rather than some more sophisticated manner of pricing. So that's an issue. That's one of the things that this bill really doesn't get at. But one of the things we've talked about is a way to help them figure out what is legitimate, reasonable pricing on their services and to help give them some expertise to deal with that. Still doesn't get beyond the price issue. You know, anytime you're talking about more stringent controls, you're probably talking about higher standards, and really that's the quality water standards are really a federal issue.
Chair, one more.
Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, and I don't know if this is a question or comment, but the issue they're struggling with, at least in this one place, is not the quality standards as much as the requirements of the training and the certifications of the people who work on the system. I mean, you've got a company here, I said, I don't know if it's a, it's not a city, it's not, I mean,
it's probably a special district.
And they've got one half-time staff person runs the entire system, and they cannot meet the requirements of the health division of their staffing because they have to have a full-time certified water master, something like that, to do it. And that's, you know, it's kind of going to force them to do something different. It's going to greatly increase the costs for the people using the water. And my question is this, you know, they're right on this 300 customer cusp. Is this going to change that, help it, hurt it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, unfortunately it won't help it, but it won't hurt it either. What they're dealing with is the new federal standards. Well, they're federal standards that are fully coming into effect. And I don't think it has an impact one way or another on that, although that's a significant issue. And it's not just in Oregon. You know, I was surprised, and water is one of those things that, frankly, I didn't know much about. Not that I know a lot about it now when I moved to the Public Utility Commission, but I find in attending or talking with commissioners in other states that this is a huge issue across the nation. And the way a lot of the areas across the country are dealing with it, frankly, are the small companies are being sold and merged into larger companies to be able to deal with some of those cost issues. Not necessarily desirable, but that's what's happening, and that's just the effect of the federal standards. This doesn't do anything about that one way, or doesn't have an impact one way or another on that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
Are the federal standards what governs, I think, water company or water systems that serve over three?
Senator, you're moving me a little bit out of my comfort zone here, but my understanding is the federal standards are talking about the safety of the water, the treatment of the water, and they apply to anybody, any system that's selling water, public or private, anywhere in the United States, and they're implemented in Oregon through the Health Division. But I believe those are federal. Am I saying that wrong?
You are, Chair Shields and Senator Fisher. The federal standards are the Health Division does apply those to the water companies, and again, it's for 15 connections or more. Water companies under 300 connections and more than 15 would be subject to the federal standards. House Bill 2226 would not apply to cities, to districts, or cooperatives because the PUC does not regulate those.
But the standards are still apply.
The water quality standards would still apply to all water companies with more than 15 connections.
Senator, we're talking about the Federal Clean Water Act. This is what I think we're talking about.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Fisher.
Yeah, what I was referring to, we've got a water district down near, it's actually just a little out of my district, but I have several friends that live there. And they just had a pump in the river furnishing water. And every individual on that took care of his own. water treatment. And they wound up in a terrible mess. I was thinking it was the federal standards and requirements, because they wanted that water treated before it ever got to the people, and that, and they were getting along very fine with it the way it was, and it didn't make any sense to me to why they should be disturbed from that standpoint. Anybody that bought into that system knew full well it was coming out of the river.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator, again, I believe that what you're referring to, there are compliance with the federal standards, and I think you need to address that to the health division on there. You're sort of outside of my league a little bit here on the water safety.
Well, I just wondered if we were running into a whole bunch more situations like this by passing this bill.
No, this should not have anything to do with that.
I think I want to clarify that this bill passed both committee and the House floor unanimously, and I think partly because you managed to stay carefully on what was under the Public Utility Commission's domain, and they probably pretty carefully clarified that if it's a health-related issue, those are questions that ought to be addressed to the Health Division. Are there more questions?
No. Just passing the Senate or the House unanimous doesn't necessarily mean anything anymore than it does passing the Senate unanimous. And some of the stuff you find out, I'm dealing with a bill right now that somebody just caught on to after it passed the House, and they're raising old Ned about something that passed the House unanimously. So.
Mr. Chair,
50 of them voted for 2004. I can't imagine what they were thinking.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, I think you raise a good point, and how whether passed in the House or not really is immaterial to your consideration. I think what I would suggest is more important is how this bill got to you. And this bill came from a group of small utility owners and customers, as well as some of the interested parties like the Health Division, that went through and suggested changes that, from a customer's perspective and from an owner's perspective, they thought would make the system, the regulation, better and improve service to Oregonians. The issues you raise are vital issues to people, particularly in rural areas serving, you know, with small water systems, but this really does not address that. I think there are some issues there that, I mean, it's hard to deal with all those water safety issues, and I think it's eye of the beholder. If you've been drinking the water for years and all of a sudden the federal government comes in and says, well, you're going to have to do it in a different way and it's going to cost you $70 a month, it's going to sort of raise your eyebrows a little bit. But this doesn't do that.
Any other questions? If not, I'm going to close the hearing on the work on House Bill 2226A. I'd like to open a work session.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move House Bill 2226 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there a discussion?
Yes, there is.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd just like to point out that I'm going to check with the small district I have out in my area and ask them if they are aware of the bill and what they think of it and if they agree with it. And if not, Mr. Chair, we'll come back to you before it gets to the floor, and maybe we'll bring it back and take a little look at it. But, you know, they didn't mention this bill to me when they talked to me about their issues, so I'm assuming that it's probably okay.
Yeah, Senator Beyer and I had a conversation about this in the last few minutes, and I agree with him. And Senator Fisher, if you have any small districts out there that you hear about before this comes to the floor, please let us know. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I would be more than happy to check with those utilities and make sure that they understand the bill and see if they're let you know if there are any problems. If you tell me who they are.
Okay. You mean you don't know all 2,000 of them by name?
Thank you.
I was just being a wise guy and saying you don't know all 2,000 of them by name yet?
Well, unfortunately, I do not.
Is there any further discussion? If not, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. House Bill 2226A is passed and to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I'm going to ask Senator Beyer if he will carry it, since he's doing some other work on the bill between now and then. With that, I'd like to go back to the order that we had on our agenda. We're going to have I'm going to open a hearing on Senate Memorial 3 and ask Judith if she'll get us ready here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Memorial 3 comes to us. One of the co-sponsors is our own Senator Corcoran. The measure does urge the President and Congress to support the continued success of the Bonneville Power Administration as a federal power marketing agency and encourages continuing the use of cost-based rates. It's very short, so I'll read the resolution, and that is, be it resolved by the Senate of the State of Oregon, the Senate of the 72nd Legislative Assembly of the State of Oregon encourages keeping the benefits of the federal Columbia River power system in the region by continuing the use of cost-based rates and by not selling the electric output of the system to the highest bidders. A copy of this memorial shall be sent to the President of the United States and to each member of the Oregon Congressional Delegation. We have received no revenue and no fiscal impact on the measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have, Tom O'Connor, right, and Robert?
Renata.
Okay, gentlemen, hold for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize, Sandy Flicker was supposed to be here, but hasn't been able to make it. The resolution that, or the memorial that you have before you is a bipartisan memorial that, as Judith said, supports maintaining the benefits of the federal Columbia River hydro system in the Northwest at cost-based rates. The reason that the memorial was brought forward is that in this year's budget at the federal level, the Office of Management and Budget included a budget note recommending that a number of the Federal Power Marketing Administrations across the country, including Bonneville, abandon the system of cost-based rates and sell their power to the highest bidder. That recommendation brought immediate opposition from the Northwest delegation and from delegations across the country where their states are served by federal power marketing administrations. Just to make it clear, as you know, there is not a subsidy in this system. The Northwest ratepayers have been repaying the investment that the federal government made in the system from the very beginning, repaying both principal and interest. And in fact, in 1996, if you remember, Senator Hatfield led an effort to refinance the debt. The outstanding debt at market-based interest rates, and the net result was a $100 million benefit to the United States taxpayers. But the system is being repaid with principal and interest. But we wanted to bring this this memorial in front of you for the Oregon legislature to support our Northwest delegation in opposition to these OMB recommendations.
Senator Shields, member of the committee. I'm Robert Vanatta. I am a director of West Oregon Electric Cooperative. We're based in Vernonia, Oregon. Perhaps you've heard of the place. We serve an area in northwest Oregon in five counties. Total area about the size of Multnomah County. Astonishingly enough, we have a grand total of 3,500 customers. Not exactly downtown Portland. Our utility goes back, and we're old enough to remember before Bonneville. And in fact, the oldest electric cooperative that was ever established in Oregon under the REA Act started in Alney, a suburb of Astoria. And Bonneville wasn't available, so generously Pacific Power and Light put a meter on their last pole coming out of Astoria, and our people collectively build a line from there out to Jewell and paid Pacific Power and Light their retail rate on the meter at their last pole, and build on the 30-odd miles into Jewell and Elsie, and actually receive power that way until the Bonneville Power Administration became available. You know, it's never been the cheapest, and even today, I regret to advise that our utility has the distinction of probably having the highest electric rates in the Pacific Northwest, slightly into double digits. And then every so often, along comes a proposal from Washington, and, you know, it was earlier mentioned, it's a kind of a bipartisan thing that comes out of the bowels of OMB. OMB decides every time there's a new president, they give the new president a list of ways to solve all of Washington's financial problems, and one of them is to have organizations like Bonneville charge what the traffic will bear for power. And, of course, Bonneville owns most of the power in the Pacific Northwest, and so the net result of that, if they really decided to charge what the traffic would bear for power, you know, there's no upper end to it, because we have to buy from them no matter what, because they own all the power. And so the idea of market-based rates for Bonneville makes no sense. It was a bad idea when it was up 6 years ago. It was a bad idea the presidential administration before that. It was a bad idea the presidential administration before that, and it's still a bad idea. And, you know, we're paying more than enough already. You know, Bonneville is somebody that sometimes I have to, you know, kind of choke when I say something nice about them, but all the alternatives I can think of are worse. And certainly this is one which is designed to, you know, the proposal to charge market-based rates is one which, if implemented, would mean everybody in the Pacific Northwest would pay a whole lot more and get nothing more. And so I certainly urge that the committee give favorable consideration to this memorial to remind the folks in Washington that we do exist out here, and that we don't particularly want to solve all of the federal budget problems single-handedly. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? If not, I'd like to close the hearing on the Senate Memorial 3 and go to a work session on Senate Memorial 3.
Amendments?
Huh?
Any amendments?
Are there any amendments? No, there's no amendments to this.
Chair, Senate Memorial 3 to the floor with the DuPont's recommendation.
Senator Beyer moves Senate Memorial 3 to the floor with the DuPont's recommendation. Is there any discussion? Those of the opinion that Senate Memorial 3 would be supported to the floor will say aye, and the clerk will call a roll. We're adopting this. We're not passing this, right? That's the correct word with a memorial. Could the clerk call a roll?
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. And since Senator Corcoran is our co-sponsor on the committee, Senator Corcoran, would you carry the bill?
Sure.
Great. Thank you. And with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Memorial 3 and open a hearing on House Bill 2799. Okay. And Judith. Go ahead, Judith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 2799 comes to us at the request of the Oregon Hunters Association. It passed the House floor 57-0. The measure increases the amount of damages that the State Fish and Wildlife Commission may collect for the unlawful taking or killing of certain game mammals and fish. It specifies a new schedule of civil penalties that apply only to actions occurring on or after the effective date of the Act. If you look at the actual bill itself, you'll notice that basically the civil penalties are doubled for the unlawful taking of wildlife. We have a no revenue impact. You have at your seat at the dais now the fiscal statement, which shows an increased revenue of $140,000 in the 2003-2005 biennium and $186,000 estimated increased revenue for the 2005-2007 budget. I'll just note that fiscal has noted that the department uses the damage revenue to support programs within its budget and to lessen the need for a general fund. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Gentlemen, I guess we'll go with Al Akins first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Al Akins with the Oregon Hunters Association. Thank you for hearing the bill today. Representative Brown could not be here this morning. He has a committee meeting, and he and I and a group of other folks met during the last year. Representative Brown, Honorable Judge Tom Bradford of Lincoln County, we had a work group. It consisted of Director Ball, Captain Koch from OSP, Swede Pearson from OSP, Bob Jacobson, a private citizen and former ODFW commissioner, Rod Harder, and myself representing Oregon sportsmen, and we looked at this issue. It had not been revisited since about 1980, 1981. And this work group felt that that the current level of restitution was too low and needed to be updated. So after many months of discussions, we came up with a draft that suggested changes to the current scheduled base after we surveyed other states and had input from sportsmen and different organizations. Draft bill was then presented to ODF&W, who had their economist Chris Carter analyze each of the categories and bring them up to today's market value. And that's what you have before you, Mr. Chair, and we would urge your support of the bill. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you. And before we go to questions, Lindsay, I'll give you a chance to hold for us for a minute.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. What brought this to the attention of myself and others was that several months ago, as Mr. Elkins explained, Judge Bradford became engaged with the values of fish and wildlife resources when he had an individual in his courtroom who had exceeded the bag limit on halibut by five fish. At that time, Judge Bradford had desired to assess a civil penalty towards this individual, became concerned that a halibut was only considered to be valued at $25 per fish in the state of Oregon. Knowing what the real value of a halibut is, he could see that the fees or the value-based schedule in ORS 496705 was obviously outdated or something was drastically wrong. He asked that I look at it, which I did do. I explained that the values and fees associated with fish and wildlife had been unchanged since 1981. Subsequent to that, a group was put together to reevaluate where we were with the values of fish and wildlife in Oregon. We did take a look at the current values in law since 1981, and what we decided to do was just simply assign a inflation factor to those values over the last 22 years, and those are the values that are now reflected in House Bill 2799. They are rounded. The exact inflationary factor came out a few dollars one way or the other, so we rounded it to the nearest $100 for your consideration. Before you do have the letter that I sent to Judge Bradford and the associated monies and revenue that was brought in during 1999, 2001, and 2001-2003. You'll note that there are counties that assess values in their court systems towards defendants in a very rigorous manner, and then there are other counties that seemingly don't choose to participate. The state can, if they so desire, assess penalties of value towards individuals who have harvested wildlife illegally, fish and wildlife illegally. However, that does come with a cost of the Attorney General's time, and normally what we do is we try to seek assistance from the local courts in assessing the civil penalties for values of fish and wildlife. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll close my testimony and respond to any questions you might have.
Questions? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, did you say, you said a halibut was worth $25, but it looks like in the bill it was worth $5 each. Is that how you came up with $25?
I think if you take a look at...
I'm looking at line 16 of the bill where it says that each game fish other than salmon or steelhead trout used to be worth $5, and halibut would have fallen into that category previously.
Yes.
Okay. Second question, Mr. Chair. I guess it would be something similar to what we dealt with in Senate Bill 196, and you and I worked with that, where fees and penalties are going, to talk about where they go and whether or not they support ongoing programs and whether or not that gives incentive to the agency or the fining authority to, do more so they can keep their budgets up. But currently, I think you said this is where the money goes, is into your operating funds now.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, yes, these funds are looked upon as values assigned to wildlife. The money that's recruited from those assessments come to the Department of Fish and Wildlife for wildlife that's been taken from the state.
Okay, Mr. Chair, are there any special programs these dollars are used for, or are they just going to your operating budget?
They're spread across administration, Fish Division, and Wildlife Division.
Okay.
Any red flags there?
You think he's raising fees just for the halibut?
You're taking my job, Corporal?
I guess, Mr. Chair, I was wondering, it seems like an appropriate use of these dollars is to go back into the species that it came from, or into this habitat restoration, or something like that, rather than just operating dollars. And I just like to comment on...
I don't have any operating dollars.
Not general fund.
They don't have any money. They've been broke for years. I don't know what they're doing with all the damn money. They're just awash in money, and you just can't find it anywhere.
I don't think I'm going to let this conversation back here go on too long. Are there any other questions? We do have Phil Donovan who wanted to...
Lindsay would love to comment on my question.
Lindsay, you want to comment?
Well,
go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, we try to split that money that comes back into the department from those assessments, evenly across the board. We recognize that there may be money assigned to a loss of a fish species or a wildlife species, but to track each one of those back from our department through the state revenue to the court system to the specific case would require a lot of administrative time. We elected to split it evenly across the three areas to avoid that extra administrative cost.
One more, Mr. Chair.
Senator Byron.
Where do shellfish fall in this? Are they considered a game fish other than salmon, steelhead trout, halibut, or sturgeon? Or are they something down below under the each specimen wildlife species otherwise protected by the wildlife laws?
I would say that they come under each specimen, not under game fish. They don't fit to the game fish definition.
Then I have to ask one more then.
Go ahead.
If we require a license or a tag of some sort for harvesting the shellfish, do they then become a game fish?
Senator Beyer, no.
Any more questions?
I'm trying to find out how much those illegal crabs are going to cost now.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm going to ask Phil Donovan if he'll step forward and give us a few words of wisdom on the bill.
I don't know about words of wisdom, but Mr. Chairman...
I'm being optimistic this morning.
Thank you. Thanks.
It's Monday.
Early on a Monday.
My name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Guides and Packers Association and the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. Some time ago, Al Elkins had brought to my attention the work group and what they were up to and the legislation that was going to be forthcoming. We'd taken the legislation to the boards. I just wanted to share with the committee that both boards had endorsed this measure.
Okay.
It's one of those rare situations where, can you believe that we let something sit untouched since 1981? Time to pick up the ball and move it.
Yeah. I was just surprised that you guys didn't think you could do something to improve it. I mean, you know, leaving a bill alone. Are there any questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Fisher.
I don't know that Phil's the one to answer, but... just wondered why we would have a great reduction down in Douglas County here at a time when it would seem like we might have an increase if people truly were out of work and trying to put some game on the table.
Maybe they couldn't afford the ammo.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, I'll assume the question is not, in fact, directed at me.
It's a question that he's addressing to the cosmos, I think. Any other questions? If not, I'd like to close a hearing on House Bill 2799 and open a work session on House Bill 2799.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2799 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer moves House Bill 2799 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? If not, would the clerk call the roll?
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. House Bill 2799 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Fisher, since you're the only one that we didn't give a bill to this morning, other than myself, would you carry the bill?
Sure.
Okay. I need to say to the cosmos myself, I guess, that if we have more bills, we had two or three other bills and people pulled them off at the last minute, so I changed the schedule to 8:30. We'll always start at 8 o'clock if we have a full agenda, but otherwise I'm going to pull it back, give you guys a half an hour more to work in your offices. And with that, please adjourn. There's that.